Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I don't have all of the evidence there, Glenn, so I'm not in a place. I have not been.
You know, look at this guy. How far has he fallen? I mean, two years ago we were talking about him being in the White House. Yeah. Now they're talking about his physical endowments.
In the quest to be clever, I completely forgot about the people that I love.
All right, well, we'll be hearing about all of that this evening here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, our number 877-876-PHIL. And we're located here on the El Pacifico, baby, every night till 1 o'clock out here on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. On this radio show, we take a little bit of a trip through the looking glass, the Alice in Wonderland of talk radio, and we give you a look at the other side of the news and the issues, perhaps the way you think of things. What we like to say is truth is our bitch. Joe Biden, a marvelous guy for the entertainment he's provided us for, the last year or so, he is now claiming that Iraq is an achievement not for President Bush. Iraq will be an achievement for President Obama. It's an amazing thing. How did this guy stay in the Senate for the number of years that he did? For this very reason. He can turn on a dime and he can look you straight in the eye and tell you that the sky is green and that he's black and Obama's white. And for some reason, people buy it. Joe Biden, tonight, 877-876-PHIL. Also tonight, we expand our coverage in the New York area, bringing on as a new affiliate WMCR in Oneida, New York. WMCR 1600 in Oneida, New York. And we're very, very grateful to have you guys with us. Plenty of affiliates, not only in New York City, but throughout the state as well. 877-876-PHIL. Now, we're going to start the show this evening to talk about something that's very, very important to parents. It should be very, very important to kids. Some kids are obviously too young to understand the impact. But let me tell you, if you're a kid and you're old enough to really grasp what it is I'm saying, there is, and it would appear, a problem in our country with obese kids, kids that are overweight, young people that are carrying too much weight. Today, we've got a story from the ABC News Medical Unit, Courtney Hutchinson and Michelle Schlieff, who are now reporting that obese children are twice as likely to die before the age of 55. The study is published on Wednesday. It followed 5,000 American Indian children from childhood to middle age and found that those who were obese as children were more than twice as likely to die from disease before the age of 55. And, of course, Native American children, if that's the focus group, there may be something in terms of genetics that causes that among Native Aboriginal North American children and maybe not among the children of European Americans, you know what I'm saying? But we're going to bring on Dr. Jim Sadler. Dr. Sadler is a doctor in San Diego, a general practitioner in San Diego, California. He's going to join us to talk about this because I know that you have spent time treating obese children, correct, sir?
Well, absolutely, yeah. And it is a problem. It's a problem for the children, it's a problem for the parents, and it's a problem for the doctors, because of all the problems that we, of all of the medical and the physical challenges, I guess, that doctors will face, and treatment challenges and therapy challenges that we face, this one is the most daunting.
Is that because, Dr. Sadler, there's just so many kids that are overweight?
It's more because, for whatever reason, and I know the reasons are compelling, people hold on to weight because they think they can lose the weight tomorrow, or they're not taking seriously what the doctor is requesting or suggesting, what regimen he is suggesting. They're not taking it seriously. You have doctors that are frustrated, and I number myself among them. And it is natural, I think, for a doctor to get angry when he sees a patient so blatantly ignoring very specific requests to help. And when it's a child,
I can imagine it's tough.
It's doubly difficult when it's a child because you're dealing not only with the sensitivity and feelings of the child, you have to talk directly to the parent as well.
Can you tell me, Dr. Sadler, and you were very good enough to open up to us before we went on the air, about a confrontation you had with a parent in your office last week?
Oh, I'd be very happy to. Again, we're only human. Doctors are human. We see these children now. As you mentioned, Phil, at the outset of your broadcast here, that the children are twice as likely to die before the age of 55 if they're obese. I told a parent who had come in with a son. He was a 9-year-old son, and this boy was 130 pounds. The child was around 4 foot, I would say at the age of, I don't have his chart with me, about 4'10".
Okay, that's heavy, huh?
The weight was everywhere on this child. It covered every part of his body. And it is natural for a doctor to lose his temper in that situation. It's natural for us, and that's what happened.
What happened? So this child came in with the parent?
The child walked in, and I saw this child had not physically, I did not see any definition there, and I hadn't seen any real change in the color. I hadn't seen any real change in the weight of the child, and certainly when he walked in, I got so frustrated because this was a child and a parent that I'd been working with carefully, and so I said what I said.
And can you tell us what you said?
I said to the parent, and unfortunately the child heard me say, I said, look at this fat, and I used a four-letter word. And I was pointing to this boy, saying to the parent, I hope you enjoy having a fat kid because you will be burying this kid. In other words, and the point that I was making there, Phil.
Wow.
Well, the point that I was making is this. No parent wants to bury a child.
Absolutely.
No parent wants to outlive their children. That happens to be just the way we're built as human beings. And so when I see them bring their children in, and they are still fat, and the parent stands there with the approach to me, I can't do anything about it. Well, if you can't do anything about it, I understand. You'll be putting that in the ground very soon. I mean, that child. And you'll be putting it in the ground very soon. So if you're happy, I'm happy.
I got to tell you, that is a very... You are direct, aren't you?
I'm absolutely direct because we've got these parents who come in with their children that are overweight, and they want information, and they want a... And I say to them, I'd be happy to do this for you. I want to see you back in 3 weeks. Here is a diet regimen. Here are some vitamins I'd like the child to take. I'd like to see a urine sample, obviously. I even asked for a stool sample. I said, now, this is what I want. In 3 weeks' time, if you come back in here and I'm looking at your son and he's got the same, you know, stomach hanging out of a T-shirt, I said, we're going to have what we like to call it, I said, this is a come-to-Jesus meeting. And, of course, they said, well, some people are confused.
Well, when you say come-to-Jesus, you mean getting down to brass tacks?
Get the straight talk, exactly.
Okay.
And I got to hand it to her. She had guts. She had real guts. She actually walked into my office 3 weeks later with the same fat, if you'll pardon me, Phil. But she actually had the guts to come back into my office with the same fat kid that she had walked into my office with 3 weeks before. And that's what I looked at her almost as if I couldn't believe my eyes that she would challenge me. And I said, well, will you look at that fat, and I used the four-letter word, I apologized to her, and...
But then after you apologized to her, that's when you said to her, you'll be burying your son before you die.
I said to her, first of all, I pointed out the statistics to her, obese children are twice as likely to die before the age of 55. And I said to her, it's very possible that fat boy that you brought in here dies next month.
Is some of this a shock therapy?
No, it's not shock therapy. I'm shocked when I see a parent come back in with the same fat kid that they walked out with. I'm shocked with that, Phil. I'm very, no, it's not. I very much take umbrage.
Well, I don't mean to offend you, Doctor, but you're saying to them, this fat kid is going to die before you. That fat F.
It was I misspoke.
No, I understand that, you didn't mean to say that, but you say the doctors get angry.
Well, we have every right to be angry.
You feel that you have every right to be angry, even when you're dealing with fat children.
We have been dealing with fat adults, overweight adults, obese adults, morbidly obese adults for decades, going on centuries, it seems. We've been trying to put a lasso around this fat problem, this overweight problem we have in this country and the world. And we're getting no closer. We're getting no closer. We have exercise. We have better diet. We have the best food that we've ever had. We have more responsible manufacturers and providers of nourishment and food. We have a great array of dietary aids. And we still have the same fat-looking people that you got to deal with. You got to look at that when you go into the office. And then, on top of it, here she comes with this 8-year-old boy that is a... Well, I got to tell you, I didn't mean to say fat F, but I wish I could say it on your show right
now. Well, I'd rather you not. You feel like you really want to say that.
I wanted to scream it. I wanted to scream. You come walking into my office with your fat ASS and this fat ASS.
All right, Dr. Jim Sadler joins us here at a world-famous Phil Hendry show. He is a doctor, a general practitioner, trying to deal with the obesity problem among children, and he had a little bit of a confrontation with a mother and her son today. When they walked into the office, the boy was still overweight. You say he was around 138?
I think the boy is probably up around 148 pounds, and he's only 4'10", 4'11".
And so you said, look at this fat F word.
Yeah, but I don't want to concentrate on that because that's not, you know, that's, you're going to make that about me. She's the one that brought the fat boy in, and the fat boy is the one that said he was going to do what I asked him to do, and he still walks in fat. And it's natural for a doctor to say, well, you fat F, because I lost my temper, and I shouldn't have.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. We're talking about health, we're talking about kids, we're talking about... Well, we're talking about a lot of stuff here, man. We're talking about the fact that these large children, obese children, could die, according to Dr. Sadler, before the age of 55. And he said to that one mother, you're going to bury that boy right in front of him. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. For an 8-year-old child to learn how to fire a machine gun unless he's living in Somalia, in which case, you know, line them up, man. The shooting range open in Massachusetts. On the line with us, Dr. Jim Sadler. Dr. Sadler from San Diego, a GP, and we're talking about the epidemic of obesity among our children. The article says that obese children are twice as likely to die before the age of 55. Do you approve of Dr. Sadler's approach to dealing with overweight children and their parents? Our number 877-876-PHIL. And basically what you've said is to us, Dr. Sadler, is you use a very direct approach, although I suppose some people might think it harsh.
I don't think it's harsh at all when you're talking about a child that is 8 years of age, weighs over 115 pounds, or one girl that we had, a 12-year-old girl, who weighs 140 pounds. And something that parents need to understand when they bring their children to any doctor, any pediatrician, any GP, we have to deal with the child physically. We have to look at the body and Some of these children come in snow pants, and their bellies are too big. They can't even see their own feet. And to use a word that, that maybe the young people use today, it's for a doctor to look at that and deal with it. It's just nasty. It's just nasty. So we would thank the parents when they bring their children in to keep that in mind.
All right. Okay. So it's nasty to have to deal with any overweight person, I would imagine.
But it's doubly difficult with the children because you're not used to seeing children that are that. That look that way. Adults, I'm used to. Adults, when it comes to their own personal weight, have very little discipline. Now, as I've said, there are a number of things we can do, but I expect that they be done. And what happened in the case of Mrs. Davey, who brought her daughter in, and I won't use her full name, but the boy came back in. And he was exactly the same body type. He still had a hard time fitting into his clothes. Looked like the same fat kid. And these parents think that I'm a miracle worker. Many times you'll have an overweight parent with a fat kid or an overweight child. I tell them to do something I expect to get done. And then when they bring the child back and the child looks the same way, I'm going to look at that kid and I'm going to say, "You look like, this is going to be nasty working with you."
Well, why would you humiliate the child?
Well, the point to humiliating the child, and I'm not trying to humiliate the child, but you're trying to get through to the parent. You can talk to a parent and say, "Your child will be dead, possibly before you," and maybe that rings a bell. It should, and maybe it doesn't. I can say to them that it's likely your fat kid will die soon. And maybe that rings a bell, maybe it doesn't. But the parent, you get their attention when you talk directly to the kid and you say, "Have you ever thought about death? Of course you haven't. You're 8 years old. But do you know, with all that fat hanging off of your stomach and your rear end and your, you know," and the kids think it's funny, but you say, "Look, I can see your butt crack," and they're, "Ha ha, you really? How'd you like people staring at your butt crack if they have to bury you face down?" And you get their attention that way, and you get the attention of the parents that way. I'm here, Phil, trying desperately.
Well, let me interrupt you here. If I'm a father and I'm listening to my child being told that if he remains that weight, they're going to bury him face down, and everyone's going to look at his rear end cracked in a coffin.
Have you ever seen the show Scared Straight, where they take children and they basically threaten them with rape in a jail?
I know Scared Straight, yeah.
This is Scared Straight. This is taking a kid, only what we scare not only the kid, we scare the parent. And we tell the parent, if you think that I'm being rude to your kid, listen to how rude people are going to be at that child's funeral when they have to bury him face down and they're looking at, excuse me for saying it, they'll ass crack.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. We're talking to Dr. Jim Sandler about obese children, the epidemic of obese children that we have in the United States, what parents can do about it, what children can do about it, and the frustration that doctors are feeling over this situation. Irene in San Antonio, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Dr. Jim Sandler.
Yes, what I want to say is that I agree with half of what he's saying, but his approach towards the child was very wrong. He is a child, and he's going to be hurt. And he's going to take that very personal. I think he should have taken him out and said, "Wait outside and talk to the mother and be strong to her and tell her exactly, you know what, you're going to hurt your child. It's up to you, but this child becomes, and you need to be more careful because you are hurting your child. You are killing your child."
Are you a doctor? You
know, I'm not. No, I'm not a doctor, but I'm a mother, and I
well,
have...
Well, then I don't see how what you're saying. Now, I understand that you have children, but I've often talked to mothers, and they don't say anything to the children because they want to ease the blow. So I have to say directly to the child that if you maintain your regimen, if you maintain eating the way you're eating, and continue to have this kind of weight problem, your mother will be weeping at your grave. Your mother will be weeping at your grave.
No,
oh my God!
Right.
You say that to an 8-year-old child?
have to say it to the child.
That's what I'm saying, that you can't do that. You're a doctor. You should know, if anything, you should know exactly how the child feels. You are making him feel real bad.
Of course.
I have to do something.
I have to do something. Otherwise, this child is going to come back in 3 weeks with his rear end hanging out. He won't fit into any clothes.
But you're in the wrong position to treat a child like that. The problem
the mother is, his mother will weep at his grave.
Phil
Hendry. His mother will cry at his grave. And all she'll see is his rear end.
Our number is 877-876-PHIL. We're talking with Dr. Jim Sadler about this epidemic of obesity among children. And I know what you're saying, Dr. Sadler, that there are a great many doctors that are frustrated. And the frustration often comes out in rather aggressive ways of talking to the children, aggressive ways of talking to the parents. But you brought up to us saying to the child that your mother will be weeping at your grave, that you'll be buried face down so people can see the fat in your rear end, the fat, you know, the what you call the butt crack.
These are ways of getting through to a child. We live in a time when these parents are making our job very difficult. That's why I have to humiliate the child right in front of the parent. The parent will feed that child anything to keep the child happy, many times to keep the child quiet, to feed the child enough sugar, for instance, to deaden the child for the rest of the night. But they will get hyper.
I was going to say, kids get hyper on sugar.
They do get hyper, but then they dull out, if you will. The eyes begin to glaze over, and they deaden. They'll sit down, and you have a child that is pliable and will do what you bid it to do. Now, I can tell you that I once told a mother in the waiting room, and I want to preface this because it didn't really happen, but I am so desperately in need of a way to wake these parents up, because they're the ones that have been deadened as well, deadened by their own desire to feed anything to their child. I told a mother in the waiting room that a seven-year-old fat kid had suffered a heart attack in the examining room.
Oh, God almighty, you didn't.
Yes, I did. And let me...
Oh, come on. You did not walk out and you told the mother what?
I told her that she had a seven-year-old... And I said, a seven-year-old fat kid. You know what I'm talking about.
No, I understand that the child was overweight.
Yeah, but I said, because you need to let her know that it's her fault. And why do I need to do that?
Wait. I want to know something. You told this mother that her seven-year-old child had suffered a heart attack.
I said a stroke and then a heart attack, yes.
At the age of seven?
Yes, I did. Can I explain this, Phil? Because, you know, with your emotion, you're going to give the wrong message to a lot of parents out there.
No, but I find that to be the kind of shock treatment that I said that you use, and you said, no, you don't.
No, I do not use shock treatment. What I do use is put on, you people in the entertainment business, you call it put on a satire.
You're not doing satire, Dr. Sadler. You're walking in on a mother in a waiting room and saying to her that her child, her seven-year-old child, has just had a heart attack.
I said, if you'll allow me to finish.
All right.
I said your seven-year-old fat kid, and I say that to emphasize that they will not immediately lunge at me, because I've had stories of doctors that have used this method, and the parent lunges at the doctor because they didn't use the phrase, you're a fat kid, and when you say that, the parent then takes, they have ownership of the child's stroke and partial paralysis and then death.
And what are you saying to these parents, exactly? They had a stroke?
You say that the child, in this case, this girl's name was Amber. You say she had a stroke with partial paralysis and a heart attack, but you're not listening to me. I tell her I'm only kidding. But this is a wake-up call to the mother And, of course, the daughter was fine.
Though the daughter is fine, I understand that, but you put this mother through this shock of that her daughter had a stroke.
Well, the face, I tell her that the daughter's right arm just limped in much the way, like Kirk Douglas, if you've ever heard him. And I said, I couldn't understand your daughter. She was saying things that I know right away she had a stroke because she was slurring her words and her face had taken on the look of Kirk Douglas or something like this because people know what you're talking about.
And this is a 7-year-old child.
And because your child is so fat, she had a massive stroke and heart attack. And I'm only kidding. And let me tell you.
What do the parents do? You say that you've had parents lunge at doctors?
If they don't say fat kid. Because what that does is it puts it back on the parent. And the parent says, you know what? I did this. I killed my child. And I said to this woman, I said, you haven't killed your child. Not yet you haven't. But you're making a very, very good start.
877-876-PHIL is the number here on the Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-PHIL. You imagine there's going to be a lot of people are going to have opinions about the way that you treat kids for obesity.
Of course, but I'm the doctor. I'm the one that has to treat.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go over to a phone call here in Providence, Rhode Island. This is Tom. Tom, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Dr. Jim Sadler. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Mr. Hendry. I've been very aggravated with this doctor that's talking tonight. Have you ever seen anybody put in a casket head down so you can see his behind?
Yes, I have.
Huh?
Yes, sir, I have. That happens in rare cases when the blood pools at the front of the body.
Well, I have never been to a no funeral. I have never seen anybody buried head down in a casket. And furthermore,
face down, sir, not head down. Face down.
Well, that's what I'm talking
about.
Face down. Yes.
So
you can see the crack of his behind.
Well, the reason why I said that is they can't fit the child into the pants that they've got for him for the funeral. And this is the kind of embarrassment.
Come on. Let's get real.
Are you telling me they can't find pants big enough for a kid?
I'm just telling this gentleman asked me a question. I've been to funerals like that. And these parents, until they start taking it seriously.
Come from because I've never seen a funeral yet where the person is buried face down in the casket.
Sir, how many funerals do you go to?
I have been to quite a few because I am 80 years old and I've been on this earth for a long time and I've been to many funerals.
Ask you this question? How many fat kids have you, in all of that, how many fat kids?
A lot of them. I've seen a lot of big people.
I'm not talking about the kids that you were in a war with. I mean, as they, real kids.
What do you mean real? He knows what you're saying.
Real kids.
Well, you're remembering the young guys that got shot up in World War II.
Dr. Sadler, what the gentleman is saying is, yes, he's seen actual children dead.
Well, then this man must live in the most death-infested city in America. He's looking at old people, little people, fat kids, skinny kids, and he says he's going to funerals all the time. Is AIDS?
Where do you get these people that gives you the conversation? Because I listen to your show.
Well, my producer
every night.
I don't know what this gentleman's talking about. What I'm trying, sir,
these
you have no
are,
idea.
They
about
don't
the horrors.
Sound very educated to me,
sir. You have no idea about the horrors I've seen with these dead fat kids.
Oh, I've seen them too. Yes, sir. I've seen a lot of life, my friend.
May I ask you, what did these kids die from? From being fat? The kids that you see, what'd they die from? See, I don't think this guy's seen any dead fat ones.
Oh, come on.
Okay. We're not talking about a fish or some kind of game
Jesus
that you tie to the front of the
Christ.
Car. We're talking about children...
I wanted to call a few times, but this tonight is very aggravating, I'll tell you.
Are you a father? No, you're not a father.
Yes, I am.
Of course, you're a mother. All right. What do you mean you're a mother?
Who said anything about mother?
I said, are you a father? You said you aggravate me too much.
Phil, and I'm sorry, I just can't go along with this.
If you have a fat kid,
you're going to be burying
another fat kid. Let me tell you why this guy's going to a lot of fat kid funerals, because those are all of his kids that he couldn't wean off of the Nestle's quick. And guess what? They're face down in a box, and he lied about that.
What is this face down? That's the part that I don't get. The fact that the kid is so bloated, you say the blood collects in the face?
The kid is going to go to sleep at night on his stomach. Naturally, the blood collects into his fat face and his gut. And when he dies, that's where it is. Now, what are you going to bury him face up? He's going to look like, I don't know what he's going to look like. He's going to look like he has rosacea. And you can't have that. And
oh, no, I wouldn't want to have that. Why not just bury him face down, especially in a pair of pants that don't fit?
Mr. Henry, I'm telling you that this is something that I saw, and you know, I love these parents calling up and breaking my chops, breaking my castanets. What's the fattest kid, just Mr. Henry, what's the fattest kid you've seen dead and decomposing? Have you got any idea?
No, I do not, sir, and I would not answer that question even if I did. To be honest with you, I am not a doctor. You are. I'm not a coroner. There are other people that do that. I don't drive an ambulance. I'm not a medic. I'm not a man that is around those terrible scenes. I put my faith in you and others to treat the dead as well as the living with respect. And what you've been saying tonight sounds disrespectful.
I don't put a kid in a coffin face first.
I didn't say you did, but the way you're talking about the child. 877-876-PHIL. Justin, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi. Actually, it's Jeremy. I'm just very nervous. I was fat when I was a kid, okay? And this doctor, if I had visited this doctor, I would have flipped out right in his office, okay? When I was 17, I ran away from home.
What do you mean flip out?
I mean, like, I would have probably clawed your eyes out. Because, you know, talking to a kid like that, I mean, I can't imagine if that had happened to me.
If you're an 8-year-old kid, you're not going to claw anybody. And if
I was a pretty good
How did you lose your weight? Tell me how you lost your weight. Let's get down to really important.
Okay, I've been listening to you for like 20 minutes now. It's driving me crazy. Okay? I got involved in a kind of gang of kids that, you know, we got involved in some crazy stuff. And I was just like, you know, my parents didn't know where I was for like a year. And by the time they saw me, they didn't recognize me. I dyed my hair. I had, you know, like, put a bunch of earrings in and stuff like that. And I just was doing some drugs. And I lost the weight, the crazy way. But if I had been in your...
So you're telling me what to do, and you're out there doing up drugs, getting AIDS, or whatever you got to lose weight. I'm saying this is much healthier to say to a kid, your mother is going to drop to her knees weeping if you die before your mother dies. And you're saying that's worse than you shooting up.
My mother thought I was dead because for like a year I was just like walking the streets in D.C.
Oh my God, what this guy's saying.
Well, look at Dr. Sadler. This gentleman he was a troubled youth, but the things that you're saying, the humiliation you're pouring on a kid may very well cause that child to go out and live the life that Justin or Jeremy did.
It's my fault.
He's probably creating all kinds of psychopaths because he's a psychopath. Okay?
You know, you go goth and you put on your green makeup or whatever you do, and that's my fault?
No, but I'm just saying, if my mother had brought me to your office when I was a kid, and you had said something like that to me, I would have flipped out, first of all. And when I was 17 and I left home, I could stand it because my mother was really fat, and I just looked at her and I saw myself. And I didn't want her to know where I was. So I got involved in this gang of kids, and we hung out in D.C., the streets, you know, and I turned my life around. I mean, it was bad for a couple of years. But then
do you really want to do it that way, or would you rather have come to my office and I could have said to you, Jeremy, you know, get it together, you fat ass.
I would have slapped you silly.
Oh, my God, that's fantastic. So instead what you did is you went out onto the streets of D.C., you made your mother cry, you almost died from any number of diseases, you're going goth one day, and the next day you're a headbanger, and they could have easily have found you in a gutter. But no,
you're
the bad guy.
Yeah, because it's people like you that torment that torment fat people.
I'm not tormenting fat people. I'm trying to get them to see their responsibility. I forget.
You know what? I wish, you know what? I wish, I think you're, what are you, in California?
I bet you, I bet you weighed 300 pounds and you braided your beard. You're the kind of guy that thinks braiding your beard is going to help you. I'm saying,
no, I didn't have a beard, okay?
And if you're turning tricks on the streets of D.C. with chubby chasers, that's my fault.
I didn't.
Oh, whoa. Let's just.
Yeah, sure.
And you know what?
Yeah, right.
Jeremy, it sounds to me like you got your life together, and how's your mother? You guys still have a relationship? Is she still with us?
No, she accepts me now for who I am.
She accepts you for who you are.
Yes, I'll tell you what.
Okay.
I didn't know who I was when I was kid. I was fat, and I thought I was normal, but I really wasn't normal. Now I realize I'm skinny, and I'm normal, and I love my body, and my friends love my body. And I'm very happy now, and I can see that if I had to go through something like what he would, do to his patients, I don't think I would have turned out as great as I am.
Well, it sounds like you did a good job.
You know how nasty it is for me to hear this guy talking about how he loves his body and he's 800 pounds or something? It's nasty.
Well, no, I'm not 800 pounds. I weigh 164. Okay, and I'm 5'11". I weigh 164, and I'm very trim.
Well, my experience is that people who say they love their body are generally 30 to 40 pounds overweight. So,
well, you know what, Dr. Sadler, I'm finding that you do not have a whole lot of you've got a lot of anecdotal information, but I don't know about anything else.
So you
have to know how tall are you, Doctor? Fat sack. What's your name?
I've been in bodybuilding competitions. That came out of nowhere, didn't it? Yeah.
Oh, talk about people that love their body. You stand yourself in the mirror all the time, pumping your muscles and pumping whatever else.
Well, I'm 53 with a 19-year-old wife.
Well, now wait a minute.
No, I do bodybuilding, and this guy should know. Okay, I walk the walk. And when I watch some kid come in who's 8 years old with the fat hanging off his ass, excuse my language.
You know, I wonder about you. You talk about kids' asses a lot. You know, did you want to
excuse me? Excuse me, you're the guy who was talking about, the tricks. Look, you can bounce a quarter off my six-pack abs. All right?
A quarter off your six-pack abs.
All right. Thanks very much.
I didn't say my ass. You talk about having ass on the brain.
All right. Thank you very much, Jeremy, and the best of luck to you, man. Sounds like you've done great things with your life.
What about me? Have I done great things with my life?
No, Dr. Sadler, you haven't. You've humiliated children.
Okay. And I didn't talk nice to the gay guy that called up who was turning tricks on the street with his, with his Cure T-shirt. Forget it.
Okay.
Yeah, he hung up. The line just went dead.
Thank you. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Yeah, do you like that? Phil, do you like that? Phil.
An Ohio inmate that says he's too fat for execution. According to this Associated Press writer in wherever the hell this is, I guess it's Ohio, Columbus, Ohio, a death row inmate scheduled for execution says he's too fat to be put to death, claiming executioners would have trouble finding his veins and that his weight could diminish the effectiveness of one of the lethal injection drugs. Well, he isn't saying that. His attorney is. Understand that this inmate probably couldn't even think of something that complicated, but the lawyer for Richard Cooey argued in a federal lawsuit that Cooey, 5'7" and 267 pounds, had poor veins when he faced execution 5 years ago, and the problem has been worsened by weight gain. The lawsuit filed Friday in federal court also says prison officials have had difficulty drawing blood from Cooey for medical procedures. He's 41. He was sentenced to die for raping and murdering two young women in 1986. His execution is scheduled for October the 14th. They've been screwing around with it for 22 years, going back and forth about what a fat pig he is. They're going to finally fry this fat tub of guts. And now he says he's so fat, he can't find a decent vein for, mainline a little bit of junk, how are they going to find a decent vein for the lethal injection? He can't find a decent vein for that Darvon that he grinds up in a spoon. How the hell are they going to find a good, you know, vein for them to finally put this dog down? His attorneys say a drug he's taking for migraine headaches could affect the execution process. The drug, Topamax, a type of seizure medication, may have created a resistance to thiopental, the drug used to put inmates to sleep before two other lethal drugs are administered. Dr. Mark Heath, a physician hired by the Ohio Public Defender's Office, testified to this in documents filed in the court. Heath says Cooey's weight combined with a potential drug resistance increases the risk he would not be properly anesthetized. All of the experts agree if the drug doesn't work, the execution is going to be excruciating. Cooey's public defender Kelly Culshaw Schneider said on Monday. Makes you wonder if these people are kidding, doesn't it? Please keep an open mind, folks, about the death penalty. Keep an open mind. You can support Barack Obama and at the same time not feel guilty about seeing a fat pig go down for the count. You can be an environmentalist, one who loves the earth and wishes only the best for the environment and wants to work hard toward greening the planet, and at the same time be exhilarated at the execution of a rapist and murderer, even though he weighs 271 pounds, and it may hurt a little bit, because I am. You can be a person who believes that gay people have the right to marry and that a woman has the right to choose, and at the same time, feel good, feel real good about Fat Boy here getting his neck stretched. That's what I think they ought to do.
Here we are getting gallows out or something. Hang the guy like in the Old West.
So I think they ought to do. Hang his ass, man. And don't tell me that the rope's going to break. Phil, you guys got to find a rope strong enough.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
It really is a very tough thing to do in the military.
Our colleagues in the House added a lot onto that that subtract from the
mainly
the genuine...
pictures. I really wanted to go because I'm originally from Germany.
We do not know if his whole body is light or not.
Did you really write this yourself with a typewriter?
Don't condescend to me.
Things are bad.
Famous Phil Hendry show every night until 1 o'clock on the West Coast from the El Pacifico here, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the Alice in Wonderland of talk radio. Through the looking glass we go every night here. This is a show where reality is our bitch. I want to thank Kirk Queedy and Guy Barton for being our very special guests and talking about the health care bill and whether or not if they make abortion available to all women, rich and poor, suddenly it's going to be very high in demand. And of course, our first hour there with Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police on how the Army blew it and how they should have had a intelligence officer from the CID, Bud, as we found out.
Yeah, that's the Army people.
Right, the CID. They said they had a female Army intelligence officer dressed as a virgin, so when that guy came out of his coma, he'd think he was in heaven and he'd spill what he knew.
That was the idea, anyway.
I don't understand that, man. I don't understand it either, if you want my honest opinion. But that's why he's in the Citizens Auxiliary Police, the CAP, and not the CID. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Flu shots for Wall Street stirs ire in New York. New York City health officials scrambled to explain themselves last week in the wake of media reports about bankers who got scarce H1N1 flu vaccines through their employers. Members of Congress fired off letters demanding immediate explanation, and the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention reminded state and city of officers of the need to make sure that the most vulnerable people get their shots first. Joining us on our newsmaker line here this evening is Robert Green, who is the CEO of Fraser Foods, a large grocery concern throughout the Southeast and the Southwest, to talk about this issue and other health issues from the standpoint of being an executive, of being the leader, a business leader, the head of a company. Bob, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Phil. It's an important topic.
You saw this story, and why would Wall Street bankers or anybody in a position of relative social or economic power, why would they have access to the flu vaccine more so than people who have a real health risk?
It's not an unfair question, Phil, but I think it's one that has to be answered in a sober and in an intelligent way. I don't think that there's any I don't think there's anyone listening to your program tonight that would doubt or disagree with me. when I say that people who are in a position to run the economy, run the country, lead during times of danger, lead during times of crisis. In other words, people who, to use a manner of speaking, people who have got keys to the car, people who have got the keys to the vault. I don't think there's any question that we need to protect those people, because if we lose those people, obviously we've got quite a calamity. And that's all that meant. It didn't mean that we're going to try to kill orphans or kill old people.
Well, then you think there's something to this story that that Wall Street bankers had more access to the flu virus? Or, excuse me, the flu vaccine?
Well, I hope they don't have more access to the flu virus.
No, I'm sorry, I misspoke. To the flu vaccine?
Well, I don't know where they would have extra access, unless, of course, there was a logical, some kind of an emergency plan that was put together by the various concerns, the economic concerns on Wall Street, whether they're bankers, whether they're stockbrokers. A contingency so that if the flu became pandemic in New York City, that those people who were really on the switches and on the levers of keeping New York City running, that they would have full access to the flu vaccine and would be protected. Because you can well imagine the panic and the mayhem that would strike for the leaders in our society struck down. Do they get to have the flu vaccine before a child? Do they get to have the flu vaccine before an elderly old lady or anyone that's vulnerable? I think that's a stretch. I think if push came to shove.
Well, let's say push did come to shove, and you've got an epidemic, and you have either children who need to be inoculated or bankers and these people that you say have their hands on the switches and on the levers. What decision do you make?
Well, it's a tough decision. There's no question about it. Do you let a child die? No, you don't let a child die. Do you let an elderly person die? That's a judgment call.
You say a child doesn't die.
You don't let children suffer. If take the child out of the equation and put the banker next to an elderly person. Now, if you're asking me, Bob Green, what is the call that I'd make if I were in charge of the New York City Health Department and there was an epidemic loose in the city and I needed to inoculate people and I've got an old lady or an elderly lady and I've got the head of one of the largest financial concerns in New York. You're asking me what I would do? I would have to opt for the head of the financial concern.
You would inoculate the guy who runs the bank.
Yeah, but I told you I would inoculate the kid before either one of them. So the kid comes first, then the banker, and then an old, what do you want to call it, the old lady. It's a tough call. There's no question about it.
Now, you're using as your rationale their relative value to society.
Question. I think you have to go that. I think you have to walk down that road, as dark and as frightening and as unlit as that road is, as fraught with peril as that road may be, with the potholes of indecision and the muggers of fear. I think you got to walk down that road. I think you've got to go down that road, and you can't wet yourself when you're going down that road. You have to make some tough decisions. And so I think that is what was on the minds of some of the people in New York when they were talking about, well, who should have the flu vaccine? Well, I don't think there's any question that if we had an epidemic, we'd want to make sure the president was protected. We'd want to make sure that our military was protected. We'd want to make sure the president's family was protected. We'd want to make sure the people of Congress were protected, because these are the people that run our country. Then next, okay, then you want to make sure that business leaders, industrial leaders, people to run banks, and that would include someone like myself because I run a major company. Okay, then we're protected. Then you come to the next level, and that would be you and the people that are listening right now. Okay, number one, obviously the families of those industrialists, my family, my wife and my children, and then our extended families, and then you get to people that we don't know or not related to, and I would start there. With obviously you're going to start with kids, and then you go to the last people I think, Phil, that get inoculated are old people, and only because, and I say this, and I know that I'm in trouble saying this.
Well, it doesn't sound very sensitive.
Well, I know, but I got to ask, what good are they? They're good. We love them, of course, we love them.
What good are they?
No, but. You're getting way ahead of me here. I'm not saying that they are worthless. I'm saying if you told me who's the most important person in our society, I'd say it's the president. And I'm a Republican, by the way. Then you go down the order and you come to me or other industry leaders, and then you have little children, and then at the bottom would be old people. But I would hope we'd have enough vaccine for them. If we didn't,
well, you're I'm asking you some questions that are probably not fair because you're not the president, you're not the head of the health department, you're just a business owner.
Well, I'm a business owner. I've got some 3,000 employees.
All right, you've got a lot of employees, and maybe this isn't fair, but what you've just outlined to me is if we had an epidemic and we had a limited amount of flu vaccine, the bottom rung of people who would get inoculated last would be the elderly. And you say, because, quote, what good are they?
Phil, I didn't say that.
That's the phrase you used. Maybe you didn't mean to say it.
All right, I didn't mean to say that. Okay, if I could take it back, I'd like to. I'm saying the elderly are at the bottom because of all the people in our society, they consume more and put out less, I guess, is what I'm saying.
But what about the lives that they've led? You know, what about...
Oh, well, if you want to start talking, I don't know. What are you telling me? Okay, one of them may be a World War II veteran. I understand that. And if you wanted to separate them out, all right, I'd be happy with that. But what if you had an old person that was never in the military and really didn't do much of anything other than, take up... You know, how do I say this? Take up space. Then I think those are the ones that you've got to... And I don't want to put it this way, those are the ones you got to throw to the wolves. But this is a worst-case scenario.
All right. Well, it is a worst-case scenario, talking about whether we have enough flu vaccine. But I think that when you say, you know, they take up, how did you put it?
The ones, they consume a lot, and they put out really nothing other than, what does it cost to rent a lawn bowling area for a Saturday? That's what they spent.
I don't understand.
In other words, the elderly don't contribute except the money they spend on renting, for instance, the space to go lawn bowling. All right? All right, that's significant. I suppose if you added that up across the country, that would be a lot of money, but nowhere near as much as what...
What does a little kid put out?
Well, little kids are the potential. You see in them an individual you'll be able to work and get out of them what you put into them eventually. It's going to take a few years, but you know you're going to see a return on the investment. With an old lady or what a you know like an old lady or something, you put a lot in.
But you realize, are you listening to yourself?
I am, Phil, and I apologize, but you put me in the position of having to answer.
No, I know, but the way you're answering the question, you're listening to yourself. Everything boils down to the value of a person in terms of what you put in, what you get out.
You asked me if we had an epidemic and people were dying, who do we give the vaccine to first? I said it starts with the president, and then little kids, then myself and other business leaders, and then old ladies. Or not old ladies, but you know. But I... Again, this goes to the whole Wall Street question.
All right. Well, Bobby, answer the questions fairly, I think, but I didn't think that I would hear quite that batting order, if you will. Our number, 877-876-PHIL. We're talking to Robert Green. He's the CEO of Fraser Foods. It's a pretty significant grocery chain throughout the Southeast and the Southwest. The question here is, born of this story about flu shots for Wall Street stirs ire in New York, do bankers and do the moneyed business and industrial leaders, do they get the flu shot first and then it filters down through the rest of us? And Bob pretty much said government first, then children, then, yes, bankers and industrial leaders, and the last are old people who don't who put out less than what it takes to keep them alive, I think is the way he put it. And I'm sure he's going to be upset with me.
Well, like, you got to be fair.
I think I was fair. I think I characterized his comments fair. 877-876-PHIL is our number. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with Robert Green here in our hour on the flu virus, the flu vaccine, and who gets it and who doesn't. The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
I think you were very unfair.
Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL, talking with Robert Green from Fraser Foods on the swine flu story from New York. This is a swine flu vaccine story that had some people upset because it was said or it was leaked or it was otherwise rumored that Wall Street heavies, bankers, and so forth would have access to the swine flu vaccine while others didn't, Bob. And whether that's true or not, you agree with the thinking, don't you?
No, I think you misrepresent me, Phil. I said that I think the first people who ought to get the swine flu, other than the president and the leaders, then little kids. And I'm a big believer in little kids, and you got to give it to little kids because if you don't, obviously you're going to have a... One of the problems you'll have, obviously, is with a lot of the liberals in government will say that you're being cruel to kids and... It's a battle you don't want to fight, and I do believe in kids. I do, but you know, the pressure is there anyway.
Well, what are you saying? If there wasn't political pressure to give vaccine to children, you wouldn't do that?
You know, you're not going to back me into that corner, Phil. I'll simply say that I would give the vaccine to children to keep them healthy and to keep a lot of the liberals' mouths shut. Obviously, yeah. The second group you give it to are, look, I just saw Goldman Sachs post a $2.7 billion profit last quarter. Do you want him to die from swine flu, the guy that runs Goldman Sachs? I don't think you do. So you do give the swine flu vaccine, I think, to the business leaders, and then you'd have to put last on that list, I think, the old people, only because, and I'm not saying I want them to die, but if somebody had to die... If it was an epidemic, like you're saying, and someone had to die, I think we'd all would rather see old people die than a little tiny, you know, than a little child.
I don't think I'd rather see that at all.
Well, I know you got to be politically correct in what you say. But...
No, I'm not being politically correct. I don't think when you say I'd rather see old people die, I don't think I would. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call here. And we have Martha on the line. Martha, you're on with Robert Green here on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, ma'am.
I'm a 76-year-old lady. I run a 4,000-acre farm. I donate to charity. I'm very active. And frankly, I think I'd do a little more for the people of the United States than Goldman Sachs. But... you know, I love the beauty of it.
Well,
if anybody's got to die, let the old ladies die. I think that's hilarious.
Well, I didn't mean to say that. I didn't mean to say that. I meant...
you just said it, my friend.
Well, I know I said it, but would you disagree with the logic of it, is what I guess what I'm saying.
This woman said she's 76 and she runs a farm.
Well, she says she runs a farm, but that probably means what do you do?
What I do... is donate to children's charities. I make quite a bit of money on my farm. I pay my own way. I have my own insurance. I'm not on Medicare or Medicaid. And I think that I contribute just as much as Goldman Sachs. And I do not get a huge bonus for doing nothing. I work every day.
Let me ask you this. If you had swine flu, all right, and I don't know why you'd get it, because you can afford the virus. I mean, you can afford the vaccine, so you should be able to have it. I'm talking about a lot of these old people that, I don't know what you want to call it, who are the ones they're always saying need it?
Elderly people are at risk because of their health, yeah.
All right. Well, she's not going to get it because she's got, you know, she's got enough money to get the vaccine.
No, you don't, because it has been very hard. I can't even. Everybody is out of even the regular flu vaccine. They haven't gotten enough of it.
If anybody on your farm dies from swine flu, it's going to be, you know, the Mexicans you got working in the barn or something. It's going to be
I
you.
Do not have Mexicans.
What does that mean? What is that supposed to mean?
Well, she knows what I mean. It's going to be the ones that are sleeping out in the bunkhouse or whatever you got. But I mean, I mean that the ones that I really, between you and me, ma'am, I think you, yes. Now, when they say to me, you got to get the vaccine to the kids, of course. But the reason why we have to is because a lot of these liberals are going to scream if you don't. You understand
well,
that?
I'm not at all a liberal.
Well, I don't know what you mean by that, Bob. Are you saying that you got to vaccinate children, otherwise liberals will scream?
I think there is a feeling in this country that you got to vaccinate children so you don't look like Ebenezer Scrooge, you know? I think most adults, if they had a choice, I think this lady agrees, if most adults had a choice, they'd vaccinate themselves first and then the kids. But they got to go.
Oh, I don't agree with that at all. I don't agree with that at all. Parents would vaccinate their children.
And the people that work for me, they have been vaccinated because they contribute something.
Do they sleep in a bunkhouse?
Will you forget about a bunkhouse?
I want to ask you something. You vaccinated yourself or you didn't? Did you?
No.
Well, then that's good. That's what I was trying to say.
Okay, so as far as you're concerned, it's a good thing she didn't get it.
Well, yeah, she's elderly, and the guy in the bunkhouse got it before her. That's all I'm saying.
All right, look at Bartha, thank you, and good luck on your, it sounds like a nice place that you got there, your ranch. Thanks so much. 877.
Well, I don't understand. What are you laughing at?
She was laughing. She was having a good time with it. The fact that, I guess maybe she's old, she realizes
that her days are numbered. You think that's funny? I'm the guy saying that she doesn't get the vaccine. She's laughing because she hasn't had the vaccine. So she's laughing in the face of death. And you don't, she gets it and I get it, you don't.
No, I get it too. We'll be back with Robert Greene on the flu vaccine. Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry.
On the line with me, Robert Greene from Fraser Foods. And this discussion, Bob, you know, obviously there's going to be people hearing what you're saying about the flu vaccine. And even though the story about Wall Streeters, these bankers getting the flu vaccine over other people may or may not be true, you feel that there is some legitimacy in considering that class of people.
But
more to the point, the comments you made, not to interrupt you, Bob, but more to the point, the comments you made about the elderly and little children.
I said that I think kids should get the vaccine.
Yeah, but you also said that, frankly, they don't contribute. Old people don't contribute.
No, the point that I'm making here, look, it's still, I'll give it to you as simply as I can. Who do you think my top customers are? Who do you think the best customers I've got are?
The best customers you have?
Yeah.
I guess people that have families.
Exactly. These are middle-aged to younger parents. Those are the ones that are my best customers. If old people stop coming into my store tomorrow, the worst thing that's going to happen is I got to rip out my fiber aisle, for instance, or I don't sell as many bananas. Any fruit that obviously keeps your regular, you're not going to sell a lot of that. You're not going to, your pharmacy, I can cut the pharmacy in half, and that's it. If little kids stop coming into my store tomorrow, nothing happens. I still sell as much candy, I still sell as much gum, I still sell as much of that, I don't want to call it crap, but you know the crap I'm talking about, Pop-Tart crap. The adults buy all that, too. So that is where I make my decision. Okay, take away the little kids, take away the old people. Is Bob Greene still rich? Yes. And that sounds insensitive? Yes, I know it does. It perhaps sounds too practical? Yes, I know it does. And yet, can you deny the arithmetic? That's all I'm saying.
As a result, you deny flu vaccine.
I'm not going to deny it if there's enough. No, I wouldn't. But if there isn't enough, you got to look, I know that people don't want to see little kids die, but I got to do what I got to do.
What does that mean, you got to do what you got to do?
I got to do what I got to do.
877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call here. We have Jay on the line in Boston tonight. Jay, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Robert Greene.
Hi. You know, I just want to
say, ma'am.
I think this guy sounds really ignorant and prejudiced, because how are you
prejudiced?
That
I didn't say anything about black people.
How is he talking about the people in the financial district or whatever should get this vaccine first? I mean, I think the vaccine should have been available to everyone, no matter who it is. It should have been available from day one to everyone. You know,
that wasn't the case. So now what do? You got to figure out who contributes and who's the most valuable.
I think everyone in society is valuable. Who are you to dictate who you think is more valuable than anyone else?
I mean, well, that sounds very nice, and I, you know, in a perfect world, I'm sure you're right. But let's face it, you know and I know that there are some people that just sit around and don't do anything, right?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if they sit around and do nothing at all. It doesn't matter. The vaccine should still be available.
Ma'am, why? If somebody, all they're doing is copping welfare checks, no offense, I don't know.
All right, let's get off. Let's get off of that.
Why do they get to have it, and a guy that, you know, is working, he doesn't get to have it?
Nobody's saying that no one gets to have it. You're saying that...
You asked me if we didn't have enough flu vaccine, who gets it and who doesn't. I say, personally, just Bob Greene, I say the president gets it, and he's black, so I'm not prejudiced. And then the government, and then, yes, I would, and my family.
But have you even listened to yourself? You're saying you're not prejudiced. You're prejudiced against everybody that's not rich. That basically, that's what
you're
saying.
No. I'm saying the practicality.
The rich people should get the virus first. Come on. I work with the homeless population. You know what I'm saying? I work with the homeless population. So what you're saying is that you don't think that I or the homeless people that I serve should get this vaccine before the big people on Wall Street.
Here's how I figure. If the guys on Wall Street don't get the vaccine, they die. They don't make their charitable contributions for tax deductions. You don't get money to run your homeless foundation, and they die anyway. See?
It doesn't even matter who contributes.
Oh, that does.
I feel it doesn't matter who contributes to society or not. It should be available to everyone. There shouldn't be any order of who gets it first and who gets it last. Look what
it's about the old people.
They would be the last on your list. Come on, so you're saying that your mother would be the last on your list, correct?
Well, my mother's dead, and so I wouldn't have to make that decision. I would have to make that decision with my father. And if it came down to either me or my dad, of course I'd choose me.
Are you kidding? Are you telling me? Wait a minute. I want to know. If there was a choice between you getting the vaccine and your father?
Listen to the two of you. Well, why don't you check with the Padre on your way out? He'll punch your ticket. You know what I'm saying? You're saying to me, Henry,
I'm just listening to what you're saying. Your father needs the flu vaccine and you need it. You'd take it.
He's 87 years old. Are you kidding me?
What's
he going to do with it?
Where did you find this person? Oh, my gosh. He is ridiculous. He's crazy.
All right. So you're telling me, a young woman, that if you get to have the flu vaccine, or some little kid that's got chocolate wiped all over his face, you're saying he gets it instead of you.
The kid should get it first. Children first.
Children all the time,
children first.
Children
great. That makes a lot of sense. All right, you may be right. But it doesn't make any sense.
People, you wouldn't even be here.
I got to do what I got to do.
We wouldn't be here.
What's that mean? Without the elderly, we wouldn't be here.
Your father? Your mother?
My mother's not elderly. She's dead.
All right, your father.
Well, he couldn't make me without a woman. Yeah, I got you, didn't I?
No, you didn't get me. You sound like an idiot, is what you sound like. Thank you very much, Jay, for your call. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to Jonathan in Wichita, Kansas. Jonathan, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Robert Greene. Go ahead, sir.
Yes. I just want to tell this man how much I think, you know, this is a bunch of dang horse manure, saying that these rich people done going to get this flu vaccine before, you know, any of the regular people out there, you know. You know, they get all these dang bonuses and whatnot, and, you know, they already make about a ton of money, and, you know, we're just going to give them another bonus. We just might as well just, you know, give them all the bonuses if we can.
This is a kid that works for me. That's not a very good accent, Jonathan.
You know him?
Yeah, it's bad call.
All right, anyway, thanks, sir. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to Dan. Dan, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, how you doing?
Thank you.
This gentleman you got on the phone, I was listening to him when he was speaking about the order he was going to give out the medicine. I don't know if you caught this, but he said, you know, the president and all, and then him, because he's a businessman, and then his immediate family, and then the people that he knows, and if you don't know them, oh well. And he said that just like that. Well, first of all, he's expendable.
Well, are you telling me that you...
No, wait just for a minute. Let me finish.
I own a business.
Right. You run a business. That's fine and dandy. But if you're gone,
exactly,
somebody else can step in and run that business. An elderly person is the people that paved the way for you to have that business. If anyone deserves it, it's the ones that paid their dues and their time and their life.
If an elderly person dies, there's like 10 more to take his place.
Wait just one minute. There's no one to take their place. They've already made their mark.
Are you kidding?
And done what they're supposed to do in life to make you where you are.
You're telling me that if an old person dies, we don't have six more to take his place.
You're not listening to this man. He's saying that elderly person is a valuable person, might be a war veteran. He might be a...
Here we go with the war veteran. All right, so the war veteran...
Wait one minute. One more minute here. I think the vaccine should be passed out to the people that need it and the most vulnerable. And people like you and me should step back and wait and see.
No, but I feel I'm the... I'm vulnerable.
How are you vulnerable?
With your attitude, you are very vulnerable. And number one is because...
Oh, what is that supposed to mean?
Well, if you caught the virus and you died, do you think that your business would fold up and disappear? No, sir.
Yes.
Your CEO would step in. Somebody would step
in. I am the CEO. There's nobody that can run Fraser Foods. I've got one partner. I got a partner by the name of Jim. I got a partner by the name of Jim Dugan. He couldn't wipe without me standing around.
You are a very arrogant person. And let me.
Look, I'm telling you.
How old are you?
37.
Are you very healthy?
Am I healthy? Yeah, I'm healthy.
Then you should be the last one to get the vaccine. Period.
Even though I'm healthy, if I die, then Fraser Foods goes under.
I doubt it. If Fraser Foods goes under, then Brown will step in and make it Brown's food. It won't stop just because you're gone. Do you think that you're the son?
You know, there's a reason, sir, why there's no grocery chain called Brown. You know what that is? Because it's not.
I just used that hypothetically. I'm just trying to let you know, in your arrogance, that you are not unreplaceable. You are a person just like the rest of us. You know, and
I can't understand you. Your phone's breaking up. And that's another thing. Your phone, okay, is indicative of you. You bought a cheap phone, and you're saying you're better than me, that I should not get the flu vaccine, you should. I think a guy with a lousy phone doesn't deserve the flu vaccine. Why? He made a bad decision. It's possible he's made other bad decisions.
Oh, get out of here, will you? This asinine attitude about the flu vaccine. Here's the bottom line for me.
No, I know the bottom line for you. Old people and little kids. Why? Because that's politically correct. Your audience wants to hear it, and you'll get more advertisers. But I know what you know, Mr. Hendry. And if push came to shove, and if the world was, you know, in a state of collapse because of the epidemic, you would rather see 10, 15 kids drop dead before you missed out on your shot.
Oh, yeah. I don't think so, man. Thank you for your call, sir. Thank you. 877-876-PHIL. I know you're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. See, I'm willing to say what I feel is true. But a lot of you guys, because you want to be what do you call politically correct, oh, I want the kids to survive. I do want kids to survive, Phil. There's nothing more valuable in this world than children. But if you're telling me it's me or a kid, you're asking me to commit suicide then, and that's against God's law.
When did you get religious?
Just now. The other...
877-876-PHIL. Thanks a lot.
You hung up on the Fraser Food. Dick is a sponsor.
The former New York madam, Kristen Davis, explains how she would charge for her services. And guess what? Some of the clients, according to her, were Wall Street bankers and Wall Street brokers. Here's an investment banker from Lehman Brothers who saw Kelsey and Keeley together and later saw Aria and Skyler at the same time. An investment banker at J.P. Morgan Securities who loves Brooke. He spent $41,000. An investment banker at Goldman Sachs who only wanted All-American girls and spent $27,000. A managing director from Merrill Lynch who saw Lana using the name Natalie. A managing director, was it that the name he was using? Because that's frightening me as well. A managing director from Deutsche Bank who called about seeing Natalie again. And he didn't know, the manager at Deutsche Bank, that he would actually be seeing the managing director from Merrill Lynch. And he showed up with the name Natalie. See, it's weird. A spokesman for J.P. Morgan said the company is looking into the matter, and that spokesman, he liked Natalie too. Now, I'm kidding about that last part, but the point is, there's guys that go to prostitutes, and they work for investment banks, and they spend a lot of money. Did that have anything to do with these banks going belly up? I doubt it seriously. However, it does speak to the mentality, to the culture, the corporate culture that we talk about, that exists not just on Wall Street, it exists all over America. How do I know? Wouldn't you like to know?
The world famous Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show with this story. Maybe a first, a Wisconsin woman called 911 to report a drunk driver. Guess who the drunk driver was? Guess who the drunk driver was that this lady was calling in to report?
911.
Somebody's really drunk driving down Granton Road.
Which way are they going?
They are going...
Towards Granton or towards Neillsville?
Towards Granton.
Okay, are you behind them or...
No, I am them.
You am them?
Yes, I am them.
Okay, so you want to call and report that you're driving drunk?
Yes.
Okay, what's your name?
Are you kidding me?
Mary.
Okay, hold on 1 second, Mary, okay?
Okay.
Are you still driving right now?
Yes.
Do you want to stop driving before you get in an accident?
Yes, I will stop.
Where's my retarded baby?
Right now?
Okay, I'm stopping.
Okay, what's your last name, Mary?
Sorry.
Are you stopped right now?
Yes, I am.
What kind of vehicle do you have, Mary?
I have a Saturn. Can I take my seatbelt off?
If you're stopped.
If I'm stopped.
If you're stopped, that's fine, yeah.
I'm in park.
Okay.
Can I take my seatbelt off?
Yeah, as long as you're not driving, as long as you're not moving.
Should I turn my car off and turn the flashers on?
Yep, that's fine. If you want to turn it off and turn the flashers on, so then we can find you. Okay, just hold on 1 second again, Mary, okay?
Okay.
Oh, isn't she sweet?
She's an idiot.
She's calling in to say that she's drunk.
Did you ever smoke, Wolf?
No, not really.
I got to hear that again. I'm sorry.
911.
Somebody's really drunk driving down Granton Road.
Which way are they going?
They are going...
Towards Granton or towards Neillsville?
Where are they going?
Towards Granton.
Okay, are you behind them or...
No, I am them.
You am them?
Yes, I am them.
Okay, so you want to call and report that you're driving drunk?
Yes.
Okay, what's your name?
Mary.
Okay, hold on 1 second, all right, Mary. Okay?
Okay.
Good girl, Mary. Although, I don't know. All right, so the story goes, according to the released 911 tape you just heard, Mary Stray of Granton, Wisconsin, called in. She said, "I am them." The dispatcher then directed Stray to stop driving and pull over. The 911 call has been posted online. You've been listening to it. According to the police report, Stray had bloodshot eyes and smelled of alcohol. She told the officer, "I called in. I'm drunk." The Wausau Daily Herald reported that Stray was cited and charged with drunk driving and operating with a blood alcohol level of 0.1% or more. Boy, that's strict, isn't it? What is the... Oh, is it... Well, you know what? I think it's 0.... I never have this right because I don't drive drunk.
Yeah, right.
I don't. 0.08 in California, and in Wisconsin, obviously, it's 0.10, so it's slightly more liberal. An initial court appearance is scheduled for December the 10th. Clark County Sheriff's Deputy Jim Backus said to the newspaper that calls of people reporting themselves are rare, and he couldn't recall other drunk drivers turning themselves in to police. Last month, a man in Minnesota was charged with drunk driving in a motorized Lazy Boy chair. The police have now put the chair on eBay with the proceeds going to the police, the state, and the prosecutor's office. What is it with people, man, who are always trying to motorize things? I always notice this. They want to motorize either a chair or they'll motorize a baby carriage or they'll motorize a wagon or something. And then they're always caught drunk driving it.
Yeah, I think because of the stress.
Yeah, you know, I'm building it. The stress of building what?
The stress of building a baby carriage that can drive, you know, like a car.
So they go out and they get drunk?
Yeah, it's a way of, you know.
Or they'll celebrate. Like, look at this. I made a baby carriage going to drive. I can drive, I'm driving a baby carriage.
And so they're going to celebrate, so they get hammered, and they get into their baby carriage, and they go out and they drive in it.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense at all, man. I think it's something about boredom and depression. I don't know what it is. Although those guys that took off in the balloon, like that hot air balloon.
The kid, you think he was drunk?
Not the kid. The guy, the lawn chair guy.
Oh, yeah. But that was a great story.
We were talking a lot about the guy, and I didn't mention it on the air. After that little boy took the balloon, or didn't take the balloon ride, but we thought he did, everybody started remembering the lawn chair guy. And if you look him up, he's on online. Wikipedia's got a biography. It's actually one of the few biographies on Wikipedia that's accurate. This guy built he attached a bunch of weather balloons to a lawn chair. And then he took off in this lawn chair and floated somewhere above Long Beach, California, I think about 10,000 feet, whatever elevation he could go to and not need oxygen. And he had a pellet gun, and he would use the pellet gun to shoot out the balloons to lower his elevation. Well, the problem is the pellet gun, the wind kicked up, and the pellet gun flipped out of the chair. So he had to wait for these things to sort of depressurize on their own, and he wound up dropping on some power lines, which he was okay. He lived, but he didn't live much longer after that. I guess he just got bored. Anyway, we'll be back here with Jack Armstrong on the great performance of Ford. How much is Obama's action? How much of that should... Well, you know what I mean.
Phil Hendry.
You blew it.
How much should Obama be praised for?
Network.com. Shores, El Pacifico, Bill Hendry.
Here's what they want to do. They want to get this over with, address it in some way indirectly.
I don't even know what to say about that, but Dish Network, if you could update the listings to say
movie
Ellen...
Kick-Ass hits theaters next week, and the role of Hit Girl is...
Well, I know a little something about West Virginia, and...
Poppycock.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. I thought that was an interesting line. I know a little something about West Virginia. And you know what? These days, I'll tell you, that is such a terrible, terrible situation there. And my mind drifts back to the days in, I guess, the summer of 08. I think it was the summer of 08. It might have been the summer of 07, that Utah mine disaster. You remember that? That was about as brutal as it gets. Because they went in to try to get the guys that were in there, and they lost, I think, three or four more guys with the rescue crew. It's just, it's an unbelievable profession. I know that there are people that take to it and do it well. Thank God they do. But and a lot of that has to do with, I think, most of us. You know, we think about the claustrophobia involved and being, I couldn't do it. You know, Stoller is do it. I ain't man enough. I admit it right now. I'm man enough for this, not that. And it takes more of a man to go do that than this. And I'd like to tell you, though, that I make lots of money and coal miners don't. But this particular job, I think actually a coal miner makes more money than me. I really do, bud. So write that down. Anyway, a new controversial Tiger Woods commercial has been airing. We'll talk about that. We have Father James McQuarters is going to join us here in just a moment. Father McQuarters at one time was a chaplain to the Mini Tour, which is a sort of semi-professional tour in the United States and Mexico and North America. Does the movie Kick-Ass go too far with an underage character killing people and using foul language? Now, I thought of the movie Bad Seed, but I suppose that's not fair to bring that movie up because she was bad. But this character goes out killing people, and if they're bad people that the character is killing, well, maybe that's okay, too. But nonetheless, we'll talk about that. Our number 877-876-PHIL, our affiliate spotlight tonight, Columbus Springs, Colorado, 4K, 1580 AM, and State College, WBLF. Oh, we're giving you two shout-outs, State College, in the last couple of months. 877-876-PHIL. On the line is Father James McQuarters. And as I mentioned, Father McQuarters, I did not know this, as the saying goes. I did not know that. But you were you're a big golf fan, right?
I should say I'm a very big golf fan. You mentioned that I was a pastor on the mini tour, and I was a pastor briefly on that mini tour, on the college tour as well.
Now, what do you do when you're the pastor on a golf tour?
Well, you know, Phil, you get a lot of passes to tournaments, but in point of fact, you are a counselor to some of the young men that play. You speak with them not about the game. Because that's obviously something that they know much more about than you do. But you do talk to them about their feelings, professional feelings, feelings of being apart from their families. The travel is very wearing on these young men.
Well, the mini tour, the golf mini tour, is almost like minor league baseball, isn't it?
I was going to say, it is very much like minor league baseball. And to that extent, it's not a very comfortable life. Much of the time you're out of pocket your own money. Because you're looking to play well enough to attract a sponsor. And for a lot of these young men, they don't have sponsors, so they're out of pocket quite a bit of money.
How much does it take? I don't know. I don't even know if you know anymore, Father, how much it takes for a golfer without a sponsor to travel the tour, do you know?
Well, I know that when I was involved, this was the early 90s, I would say that you had to have probably $30,000 to $40,000 just out of your own pocket or whatever. I'm talking about the basic now.
Transportation.
Transportation and lodging. And of course, if you have to have equipment repaired, if you need a new pair of shoes, if you need, obviously, the entry fee for a great many of these tournaments, which are all provided by the better golfers have sponsors that provide for all of this. This was money that you had to have. So I'd say in the neighborhood there, $30,000 to $40,000 to $50,000 of your own money.
And then, of course, if you win,
If you win, then you're able to replenish what you've paid out. But really, the most important thing, Phil, is for them to attract sponsors. And I think that in talking about golf, you know, it's a very difficult life, as I said, when you're coming up. Tiger Woods is a great example of a tremendous athlete. And I was worried, loving the game of golf as much as I do, I was worried that we might not see a Tiger Woods play because his personal problems would make it difficult for him to play.
Right.
Yet he's been able to put these personal problems aside to a very large degree, Phil, I think, by virtue of the fact that the paying public, the golf fans, have decided to put away their animosity, as it were. And it put away the anger toward him.
But the golf fans are a little bit more forgiving?
I think I've seen a magnanimous nature on the part of people. Which is not to say that that everyone is as altruistic, I suppose, as you want to say, but because, of course, we all want to see Tiger Woods play golf. This is the bottom line for most of us. But I do believe there is the hope and the dream that we are all kind enough that we can say to Tiger Woods, we forgive you. And, you know, forgiveness is the cornerstone of the Christian faith.
It is, yeah.
And if we talk about forgiving Tiger Woods, we talk about forgiving some of the missteps, perhaps, that some of our leaders have made. Can we forgive someone an unkind word? Can we? I heard you talking about this Virginia governor who did not mention the horrible, horrible scourge of slavery during this proclamation for the Confederacy. Well, do we have to think ill of the man? Can't we forgive him?
I understand that, yeah.
Can't we forgive the angry people who said hateful things in the heat and the passion of the moment during this health care debate that I know that is so important to American people? Can we forgive the hateful things we said to each other during the Iraq War or the war in Afghanistan? And how terribly difficult these times were for all of us as we sought a better way for our country, you know, Phil.
It's a very good point, Father.
I think forgiveness. Can we forgive, for instance, the Catholic Church and the indiscretion that some of the priests who use poor judgment? Let's forgive these priests and move on and give them their rightful place back in this parish. Can we do this? I think we can. Can we?
Well, now that all of a sudden you just came up with one there.
Which one are you talking about?
I'm talking about the Catholic. You just said, can we forgive the Catholic priests their indiscretions and poor judgment and allow them their rightful place back in their parishes?
But that's exactly what we're talking about, aren't we? We're talking about forgiveness. Aren't we talking about forgiveness? We're talking about forgiving. If you, for instance, can forgive the hateful words or even a better example, is Tiger Woods himself. Would you look at the way that he used women? And because we know that women are, in many ways, as men, we view women in many ways as we would a child. We're not saying that they're children, but we look at them in a manner of speaking as if they're defenseless, that they may have childlike minds.
Well, I don't know, Father. I mean, with all due respect, you're a Catholic priest, a celibate priest. I mean, were you married before you became a priest? Or?
No, I was never married, but I did have girlfriends. Of course I had girlfriends before I became a priest. And I had, I didn't become a priest until my early 30s. I was in business through much of my 20s, and I had girlfriends. And not married, of course. But I know that men have looked upon women as childlike, as weak, and needing protection. And that is as it should be, I think, in some ways.
Well, you don't want to go the whole route with that one, because women will be very offended by that. I mean, you know, if I can just jump in, Father.
Go ahead.
You know, there are times when you look at a woman in a traditional male-female relationship, and you say, I want to protect her, I want to take care of her, and I think the woman wants that. She wants to be protected. That's kind of those traditional roles that nature seems to have chosen for us by virtue of the evolution of the species.
Of course, and that's to be expected, but also we see them as childlike in their decisions, you know. And so there's no difference, really, between a Tiger Woods and it's not no difference, but the Tiger Woods treating women as if they're children and the Catholic priest and the children. These are both very serious steps, and yet we find a way to forgive Tiger. And I say we find a way to forgive the priest, and we find a way to forgive Code Pink, and we find a way to forgive George Bush. And we find forgiveness in our hearts. Let this be the season of forgiveness.
Well, you see, the thing about women being childlike, I don't think that that's necessarily a flattering description. Now, you may think that women are not intellectually up to snuff.
No. And I'm not saying, but there are a great many brilliant women. No. I'm not saying that at all.
Well, then what do you mean that women are childlike in their thinking?
Well, that they're childlike when they say to you, you know, and I don't know this for sure, but I've heard from, and I could say that I've heard this from men, and I won't say who, but when they're having reconciliation, you know, the woman will say, oh, daddy, you know, this kind of thing. You know?
Well, that's sex play between a man and a woman.
Well, right, but it's the same thing. She says, oh, daddy, you know. So we look at them as childlike, and they go, daddy, you know, I have to go wash. Well, I think they say, what did they say, brush my teeth. I've got to brush my teeth. I'm thirsty. That kind of thing, right?
Well, are you talking about women now?
Yes, women. So if we forgive Tiger Woods, the insulting and depraved way that he treated women. And yes, yes, I know that it's extreme, but we forgive the Catholic Church and the priests the way they treated some of these other children too, you know, in the church. And it's a season of forgiveness here. That's what I'm asking for, a season of forgiveness.
You're asking for a season of forgiveness. We've forgiven Tiger Woods, and we forgive the Catholic priest. I just don't see it as the same thing.
What don't you see? I've already pointed out to you that the women are childlike.
Well, no, I don't think you have pointed that out.
Remember, Phil, that in Luke it says, and Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Father, forgive them. They know not what they do.
What does that mean?
That means that they're like children, that they're not bright, you know. And
well, does that mean that Tiger Woods is like a child? Does that mean that the Catholic priests are like a child?
No, but you see, you put the two of them together. That's what I'm trying to do here. I want you to yoke them together in your mind so that we can have a season.
Well, I don't want to yoke together in my mind Tiger Woods and what his transgressions were with the Catholic priests. It's a little difficult, okay?
I understand it's difficult here, but that's because forgiveness is difficult for you. Right now it is. I would think that as a Catholic, you'd be able to show the way.
All right. Father James McQuarters is with us. 877-876-PHIL. Finding the way to forgive. Forgive Tiger Woods. Forgive the Catholic priests and their molestation of children. Because in the end, it's a season of forgiveness. 877-876-PHIL. World famous Phil Hendry Show. Back with Father James McQuarters in a moment. Well, what were you saying to Phil Hendry back here with Father James McQuarters? What were you saying to me about the Tiger Woods?
I was saying that Tiger Woods has two children. That Tiger Woods has two children, and that those two children, in their own way, represent the violation of innocence.
Now, Father, you know, I'm going to take some phone calls here, but I want you to be very careful.
I'm not saying that Tiger Woods...
No, I want you to be very careful, because what you said to me in the break, that Tiger Woods violated his own children, and so what's the difference between that and the Catholic priests?
No, I did not say that, Phil.
Well, now, come on, Father, you're not going to lie to me, are you?
I said to you the following thing, if you'll allow me. I said, if we say the Catholic priests violated children, did not Tiger Woods violate the respect that the children should have for their mother by lying to their mother? So in a way, didn't Tiger Woods fondle his own children emotionally, is what I'm saying.
That's the word you used. I didn't like that word, Tiger Woods fondling his own kids. He didn't do anything to his children. He did it to their mother.
But he did it to their mother. You see, to understand that God's grace and God's love covers us all. But we also have to be open to the fact that God's punishment sees all. And just because Tiger Woods did not, in his own way, reach out and touch a child the way the Catholic priest might have used poor judgment at an errant moment, Tiger Woods did, in his own way, reach down and fondle the brain of the child.
What do you mean, fondle the brain?
Fondle the brain, which is where the emotional life is.
Of his own children.
Of his own children, yes. Oh, I'm not saying that he did the terrible things that many people have said the priests, they talk about the priests doing. I'm not saying that at all. I am saying, though, that you have to understand that Tiger Woods, in his own way, I don't want you to get angry with me, but he reached it and gave the brain to Squeeze. And in so doing, emotionally, those children.
Well, that's a hell of a statement to make. That's a hell of a statement to make.
But we're still not saying that it's final. They're telling the truth, that they're bullshit.
Now, I know what you're saying, but I don't like it. I don't agree with it. 877-876-PHIL.
I understand that you don't, but understand that I have a very special calling from God as a priest, that I represent God, and I represent Jesus. And so for you saying that you don't agree with me, you don't have to agree with me, but you're basically saying that you don't agree with Jesus Christ. And you're a better man than me.
Well, Father, I don't really, forgive me, but I won't, I'm sure you understand what your calling is, but I don't necessarily agree with that. I'm sorry. Ken in Detroit, you're on the Phil Hendry Show, listening to us on WTDW with Father James McCorders. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, I was just calling. I totally disagree with you, Father. Comparing an affair between two consenting adults like Tiger Woods had is not the same thing as Catholic priests molesting children. That's not even in the same category. It's way off base. Way off base.
What about the point that I made about women being childlike?
Women are not. You know what? My girlfriend is an equal in my eyes. She is not childlike in any way.
Doesn't she call your daddy?
No, she doesn't call me daddy.
Oh, come on. Wait, hold on. You're talking about, Father McCorders, you're talking about the play between a man and a woman in intimate times. It's completely different.
Well, doesn't she say to you, I'm thirsty, get me a drink of wah-wah? She never says anything like that.
No.
Okay, it doesn't make any difference, man.
Strong women like Michelle Obama or Hillary Clinton, you think they say that?
I bet your money.
I wouldn't, my young friend.
I told Phil that in my 20s.
Like that.
Well, when I was in my 20s, before I became a priest, I was very much a single man. I was in business. I'd go to the seminary until I was 29, 30 years of age.
How old are you now, though? You make a good point.
I'm 67 years of age, so it's been a while. But I can tell you this: that women haven't changed much in 40 years. It's basically the same species.
Father. When you say, does she say, I'm thirsty? That is the intimate play between a man and a woman. It has nothing to do with the actual emotional life of a woman.
Well, when a woman says to a man, "Daddy, I'm thirsty. Get me a drink," you're telling me that's intelligent?
That's her having, she's charming him. She's playing with him. Okay?
Well, you guys are gonna have to run another couple of hills to carry that pack. Because I think
that view of women is just way off. Women don't talk like that. And if they just want a drink of water talking in a baby voice like that, I don't know what experiences you have with women, but that's...
Nobody talks like that.
Okay, let's get off of that topic because I want to get onto this far more serious. When you say, Father McCorders, that Tiger Woods emotionally fondled his kids,
I stick by that 100% because when he disrespected their mother, and when he went out on their mother, and jeopardized the health and well-being of that family, yes, he did. Most certainly, emotionally, he reached in and gave it a squeeze. If you want to put it in those terms.
But you're saying that that's the same as the priests molesting kids.
I don't see any difference. I really don't. I really don't. Well, I'm sorry, but I dare you to argue against me on that one.
This is what's wrong with the Catholic Church today. The views of the people that are running the church, and that Tiger Woods, the family issues that have to do with him, and the media's blown it out of proportion. These are issues that he dealt with his family, and he was wrong. But it's not the same as molesting hundreds of children, those priests will have a special spot in hell for them. Definitely.
That's right. All right, listen, Matthew, thank you for your call. Father James McCorders talking about if we forgive Tiger Woods, let's forgive the priests. 877-876.
Phil Hendry.
Everybody hates me now.
Phil Hendry Show.
Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Coming up, we'll take more of your phone calls, and we have this controversial Tiger Woods commercial to get to. And there's a hell of a lot more in the news besides Tiger Woods. We'll be discussing the this Confederate proclamation by the governor of Virginia, who finally, quote unquote, got it straightened out. And don't forget, on our website, you can watch you can watch live streaming audio, live streaming video, and listen to live streaming audio.
What you say is you need to watch the video and you have to listen to the audio.
Yes, Father. All right. Now, Father James McCorders joins us.
I do enjoy watching and listening to your program every night.
Thank you very much, Father. But I'm troubled by your comments. You know that.
I understand.
I'm very troubled by the statement that you make, saying that Tiger Woods and molesting Catholic priests, somehow this is the same thing.
But what would you say about Deborah Lefebvre?
Hold on for a minute. That somehow this is the same thing is wrong. And to say that Tiger Woods, by cheating on their mother, has somehow fondled emotionally his children, I think you're walking right up to the edge of a lawsuit there.
What do you call the Deborah Lefebvre? Mary Kay Letourneau. We don't call this child molestation. Of course we call this child molestation. And yet there are people that say Deborah Lefebvre and Mary Kay Letourneau somehow are not the same. That somehow it is more benign. That somehow it's not quite as destructive. I don't agree with that at all. I think it is as destructive, if not more so. But I do put the Catholic priests in the same category as Deborah Lefebvre. In the fact that Deborah Lefebvre, it was tough to say no to something like that. I'm sure that a lot of boys would say that. And I'm sure that maybe some would say the same thing about the priest.
Oh, God, are you kidding me?
Well, wait a minute. If you look at Mary Kay Letourneau and you say, boy, you know, I'd break a stained glass window to be with that. Why can't you say the same thing about a priest?
Are you kidding me or something? These priests, we're talking about small children. I'm not even going to get into a discussion like that. All right?
I don't think you're being fair. If you say, for instance, that...
No, I know exactly what I'm saying. I don't want to get into a discussion like that.
But if this is child molestation, which of course it is, what did Tiger Woods do when he lied to millions of American children and said, be like me, play golf like me, eat the cereal that I eat, buy these kinds of shoes, what have you? And all of the things that these sports stars and the sports athletes do. And you know that... when I was a child, and when you were a little boy, Phil, we had the box of Wheaties. We say, on the box of Wheaties, there's the great tax champion. I don't know the name of the man.
Well, they had Bob Seagram and...
Right, right. And Bruce Jenner.
Bruce Jenner was on there.
Right. And what would you say if they lied to you? If they lied? Bruce Jenner, I feel, has lied. He's lied to an entire generation. Bruce Jenner... who was a great athlete, and now he lies as he goes out and gets plastic surgery for his face so he looks as if he's been in a warehouse fire. He looks terrible, terrible. His vanity has made his face as if he's in a wind tunnel. Well, the same thing can be said, I believe, for Tiger Woods, who's lied to generations of young people by saying, be me, be Tiger Woods, and guess what else? I've got that clap, and excuse me for saying that, Phil.
Oh, come on, Father, it's not even becoming for you to... I don't think it's becoming of a Catholic priest to discuss in such detail these things, and I think it is also very, very wrong to compare... You know what? Yes, it was child molestation, but I know why you're doing that. You're trying to make it a little bit more benign than it was.
In what sense are you saying?
You're bringing in Deborah Lefebvre and Mary Kay Letourneau and saying, well, you know, that's child molestation, too. I think I know what you're doing there. 877-876-PHIL. Here's Walt in Cary, North Carolina, listening to us on WPTF. Walt, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Father McCorders.
I don't think I'm lying.
I understand, Father, but I don't like the comparison. Go ahead, Walt.
I'd like to say, you know, these children that have been molested, their families and these children go to the priest for guidance and direction. These priests are supposed to be anointed by God and appointed by the sole Lord, and then they turn around and they totally violate these children and their families. There's such a big difference between that and Tiger Woods having an affair or several affairs and cheating on his wife. You know, these kids are ruined for life. Yeah, people look up to sports figures as somebody to look up to, but the Catholic priest is the one that people go to confide their problems and get direction, spiritual direction, and then these priests go and do these atrocious things to these children?
Absolutely. I don't disagree with you, Walt. I don't disagree with you at all.
But I have to ask you, Deborah Lefebvre and Barry J. Letourneau, I would feel violated were I the child who was molested by Deborah Lefebvre. I would. But, come on.
But what do you mean, come on?
Priests, he knows what I mean.
I don't know what you mean.
These priests are supposed to give guidance
and direction, spiritual guidance and direction.
Right,
Deborah
Lefebvre was not a priest.
Well, Deborah Lefebvre was a teacher, though, and she's supposed to give guidance and protect. I don't disagree with you or Walt. I don't disagree at all. I'm simply saying, if you're going to vilify the priest and say that Tiger Woods is a much better man than a priest, I say to you, what about Deborah Lefebvre?
People don't go to Tiger Woods looking for spiritual direction. They look at Tiger Woods as a sports figure and somebody to admire the way he plays golf, not somebody that's going to give them guidance from God. The scriptures say give Caesar's things to Caesar.
Well, hold on.
And Caesar's law.
Yeah, and render the things to God that are God's, yeah.
Caesar's law says
that child molestation is completely wrong, and you're saying to put these priests back in the position where they can do this
I'm saying these priests should go to prison.
Father McQuarters, what are you saying about? I know what you're trying to say about Letourneau. You're saying, "Hey, Mary Kay Letourneau, she molested those kids too." But hey,
no, I'm saying if Mary Kay Letourneau and Deborah Lefebvre jumped me, I would say I'm violated, and please, someone get a police officer. But by the same token, you know, you die with a smile on your face. Now, how do you know the same thing didn't happen with these Catholic priests?
All right, now that's what I'm saying. Throwing that into the mix, like, oh, well, you're going to die with a smile on your face.
Are you telling me that Deborah Lefebvre, you wouldn't break into a bank for her?
I'm an adult man, okay? I'm 57 years old.
When you were 13.
When I was 13, I was 13. I was a kid. I was a little boy. You could have gotten me to do anything. You could have talked me into anything. When you think about kids, what do they want more than anything else in the world? They want adults to protect them, and they want to do things to please adults. They don't want the adults to be pissed. They don't want the adults to be upset. They want the adults to be happy with them. So children are in a particularly vulnerable place. When you ask them to do something, they'll do it because they want to please the adult and make sure that the adult is happy, because when adults are happy, a kid is happy, okay?
And you're trying to tell me that those women didn't do things to make Tiger happy so he wouldn't get pissed off and beat them or do something with a...
What are you talking about, man?
I'm saying...
Off his rocker.
If I'm off my rocker, you're saying those women wouldn't do what Tiger wanted them to do to keep from being beaten with a wedge. All right, I said it.
You're telling me that Tiger Woods was now beating those women with golf clubs?
I don't know.
Well, why don't we just slip that into the conversation? All right, hey, Walt, thanks for your call, sir. I appreciate it very much. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go over to Winchester, Tennessee. It's Pam. Pam, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Father James McQuarters. Go ahead, please.
Thank you very much.
You used a great deal of any language to vilify me.
I'm not vilifying you. You're the guy that's talking about Tiger Woods beating up women with a pitching wedge. Go ahead, Pam.
Let me just make a few comments, if I can. I am a social worker. I have been a social worker for over 20 years. And about five of those years working with sexually abused children.
Perfect. And, this is what I was waiting for.
Yes, and I have seen the effects on the children. I have seen the effects on their families. And you cannot compare Tiger Woods' situation with this. It is totally different. It's not even in the same ballpark. So, I am very concerned.
I am not Catholic. She didn't say it was worse.
But I will tell you, the lives of
18 women that he had affairs with, and a priest devastates maybe, what, one or two kids?
Is that all? Just one or two kids?
Tiger Woods,
number one,
18 women.
I don't think Tiger Woods' children know what happened. I doubt their mother sat down and told them. They're very young. So unless somebody tells them, they don't know what's happening right now.
But you cannot
compare the two situations. They're not the same. And as far as priests being allowed to return to the church, no, they should not ever be allowed to return to the church because they're pedophiles. Let's use the word pedophile.
All right.
And pedophiles
I'm very happy to use that
treated.
Word.
had to file a
You know the one kid can't be treated.
You know the kid that married
the one that molested him? You know that kid, right? What do you say about that? And I'm saying
about
you. And I know you do great work. I know you do great work, but I'm saying, isn't it possible that, you know, I asked Phil, he's 13, he sees Deborah Lefebvre, and he goes, yeah, man. And
I didn't say that at all. You're not listening to anything I'm saying.
I have a 13-year-old son, and they were not hard enough on Deborah. You know, they did not treat her like they would have treated a man that molested.
Well, that's one boy he married. He married the lady. What was the kid's name, Phil?
You're talking about Mary Kay Letourneau?
Yeah, he married her. He married her. And the priests are getting what? They're taking the priest, and they're dragging him behind a jeep. Mary Kay Letourneau ended up marrying to the boy she molested, and they lived happily ever after. So wouldn't you agree
that's
that that old
situation that a priest in an authority position, a man of God...
What? Mary Kay Letourneau was in an authority position. What about the nun? Yeah, there you go, the nun. That nun...
You know what, Father? You can dig all you want, man, for all kinds of examples.
Still, I'm looking for God's forgiveness. I'm looking for a season of forgiveness. I'm trying to get all of you together
saying,
on the same page.
I'm not saying I'm not willing to forgive. What I'm saying is children have to be protected. And therefore, pedophiles are not allowed to work in child cares in the state of Tennessee.
You find me a young man who wants to be protected from Deborah Lefebvre, and you want to put him in the nut house.
Well, you know
what?
I'm going to take my son from Deborah, and he's 13 years old.
But if your son ever asks you for protection from Deborah Lefebvre, put him in a nut bin.
Oh, is that right? Is that right?
You got it.
Is that right? A 13-year-old boy, if he said, Mom, that lady is bothering me, if it was Deborah Lefebvre, the kid belongs in a nut bin.
I think so. That's an unprofessional opinion. But wouldn't you want to put that, wouldn't you want to wrap that kid up tight?
So are you trying to make this problem the boy's problem?
I'm saying to you.
Deborah's problem.
Deborah is a pedophile as well.
All right, I'm not going to get it. Yeah, but listen, Pam, thank you very much. Good calls, and thank you for your great work that you do in your community. 877-876-PHIL.
Well, you're not thanking me for the great work I do in my community because of the fact that...
You know, Father, you're. I know what you're doing. You're using this Deborah Lefebvre, Mary Kay Letourneau. Hey, you know, they molested kids, too. Hey, you know.
Well, you still haven't answered it. Would you or would you not take a 13-year-old kid that said that Deborah Lefebvre would make a freight train take a dirt road? Wouldn't you take that kid... Wrap him up and put him in a soft room. Yes or no?
Father.
Yes or no?
Hang up on him, man. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Tiger Woods, the molesting Catholic priests, Deborah Lefebvre, Mary Kay Letourneau. Is there really any difference? Shouldn't we just forgive and forget? Father James McCorders. More with him coming up on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. 877-876-PHIL.
World famous Phil Henry Show.
877-876-PHIL, and we're going to get to some more phone calls. Father James McCorders joins me from Belmar Academy, Glendale, California. We also have on our newsmaker line this evening checking in is David G. Hall. He is the Vice President of Syndication for the Phil Henry Show. And, David, you had a point that you wanted to make concerning what we're talking about tonight, right?
Yeah, I do. And first of all, I want to say good evening to Father McCorders. Good evening, David. And to you, Phil. And to mention to you that I don't disagree with the discussions you're having with Father McCorders. I think that it's valuable, but I think we need to understand that. And Father McCorders, if I'm wrong, please tell me. We live in a very modern time, Phil. Tiger Woods is a Buddhist. You have spent 50-plus minutes with a Catholic, and I don't find anything wrong with that, but I would ask you, and I think I ask all of your listeners, that our sympathies are with Tiger in a very difficult time, and he's a Buddhist. He's not a Catholic.
Well, you know, the book, Living Jesus, Living Buddha, you know, I'm not finished yet, Father, if you don't mind.
That you have given this Catholic priest all this time.
Well, it's a question of spiritual health.
Hold on for a minute. People jumping all over me here. I haven't finished what I'm saying.
I got to take some calls, David.
I'm going to ask you now, Phil, and I'm sorry to have to use this language. I'm going to ask you to please shut up. You've got a Catholic priest on, and I have no problem with that. Tiger Woods is a Buddhist. This is a world now that we live in that has Muslims and Buddhists and Confucius and everything. It's no longer just the Main Street Methodist Church. Do you understand that?
Yes, I understand that.
All right, so putting on the Catholic priest and the Presbyterian and this, that's fine, but we got to get with it here. There's Buddhists, there's Muslims, there's every other kind of religion that's got nothing to do with Catholics. And that's all I'm at. And Father, forgive me, but I think you've been rude. I don't understand. You just said I don't understand. I don't understand, Father. I think you've been rude to me. I think you've been rude to Phil and his listeners and fans. That Catholicism has no say in this particular situation. Well, you're talking about molesting priests need to get a pass. They molesting priests get a pass, and they get their ticket punched the same way that Tiger Woods does. I don't think so.
All right, let me take a phone call. Hold on, 877-876-PHIL. Here is Lulu in Denver, Colorado, listening to us on KTNI. Hi, Lulu, and welcome to our show. Go ahead.
Hi. I just want to say, yes. I think the father's reasoning is a lot of reason the people are turning away from the Catholic Church. I think his reasoning is really warped. I don't think that think like that.
I'm not approving of molesting. Of course I'm not approving of that. That would make me in league with the devil. But I'm saying to you, the devil looks just like Deborah Lefebvre. Oh, yeah. See, that's not fair. Yeah, you say it's not fair because you know what I'm talking about.
What do you mean, Deborah Lefebvre, oh, yeah?
Because every boy, there's not a 13-year-old boy out there that wouldn't want to, well, I don't want to say it, but a lady on the line. But
well, I just think that your reasoning that you relate everything in a sexual or a desirable manner is just really, it's like, I can't comprehend that. Because in my day-to-day life, I don't relate everything in a sexual or desirable manner. And it seems to me what you're saying and the point you're trying to make is that everything, you know, subconsciously revolves around sex to people. That's what I'm getting from you.
No, I'm saying that if you're a 13-year-old boy, and if you're a 13-year-old boy, and here comes Kim Kardashian, you know what I'm saying? If I don't know, Kim Kardashian, she's got a big rear end. Why would a kid want that? Oh, give me a break, will you?
What are you guys talking about now? Lulu and I are talking about the tragedy of these priests, and you, Father, trying to compare that favorably to Tiger Woods, and then telling me about Deborah Lefebvre. I'll give you that Deborah Lefebvre is hot. Mary Kay Letourneau was hot. They were two teachers who took advantage of the children that were in their charge, and I stand by what I said. Children do anything to make adults happy. That's the tragedy. That's the sickness. That's the disgusting reality of child molestation, that children want to willingly make adults happy. And that any adult that would take advantage of that attitude.
You know, Phil, you have a real good
speech. Especially when they're adults that are in positions of trust. Especially when they're in positions of trust.
Right.
What position is that?
Thank you, Phil.
A position of trust.
Yeah, when they're in a position of trust, you know, children really do want to please them.
Well, what? Are your legs in the... I don't understand.
Position of trust!
Oh!
Like the father,
Lulu,
you know that.
Yeah. Lulu, thank you very much. 877-876-PHIL. Lynn in Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi. I just think that this priest here is beyond delusional. To compare the things that he's comparing. Now, I'm Catholic, and, you know, I no longer practice the Catholic religion.
Wait a minute, Father. Let Lynn finish.
I no longer practice the Catholic religion because of all this controversy that's going on with these priests. It's disgusting.
That's great.
And
that's
for
a good
you
idea.
To sit there and try to justify what they have done and say that it's okay for them to go back into the church around children after we know what's happened, and then for you to compare that with what Tiger Woods has done, there's something going on there that's not clicking.
Oh, Mary Kay Letourneau.
Oh, will you stop with Mary Kay Letourneau?
You keep...
All right, listen, thanks very much. Yeah, I know, Lynn. We got a break. Lynn, thank you. Great call. 877-876-PHIL. Back with more of your phone calls. 877-876-PHIL after this.